Om Agnanandananda Syakananjana Slakaya Chasur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Iham Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagarjatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sarvaitam Savadutam Prajana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Visakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karna Sindho Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Brindavaneshri Vrishubhanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sinubhyevacha Patidanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitananda Shedwaiti Gadadhar Shivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 5, The Demigods Appeal to the Lord, Text Number 50. Namaha Tubhyam Anantaya Dvara Vitarkya Atma Karmane Nirgunaya Guna Ishaya Sattva Staya Cha Sampraptam Namastubhyam Nantaya Dorvitarkyatma Karmane Nirgunaya Guneshaya Sattvastaya Cha Sampraptam Namastubhyam Anantaya Dorvitarakyatma Karmane Nirgunaya Guneshaya Sattvastaya Cha Sampraptam Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. My Lord, all obeisances unto you, who are eternal, beyond time's limits of past, present, and future. You are inconceivable in your activities. You are the master of the three qualities of material nature, and being transcendental to all material qualities, you are free from material contamination. You are the controller of all the three modes of material nature, but at the present you are in favor of the quality of goodness. Let us offer respectful obeisances unto you. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead controls material activities manifested by the three modes of material nature. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Niragunam Guna Bhaktri Cha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always transcendental to the material qualities. Sattva-guna, Raja-guna, and Tamaguna. But nonetheless, he is their controller. The Lord manifests himself in three features as Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshvara to control these three qualities. He personally takes charge of Sattva-guna as Lord Vishnu, and he entrusts the charge of Raja-guna and Tamaguna to Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Ultimately, however, he is the controller of all three gunas. Lord Brahma, expressing his appreciation, said, that because Lord Vishnu had now taken charge of the activities of goodness, there was every hope that the demigods would be successful in fulfilling their desires. The demigods were harassed by the demons, were infected with tamogun. However, Lord Brahma had previously described, since the time of Sattvagun had now arrived, the demigods could naturally expect to fulfill their desires. The demigods are supposedly well advanced in knowledge, yet they could not understand the knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Lord is addressed here as Anantaya. Although Lord Brahma knows past, present, and future, he is unable to understand the unlimited knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Namastu Bhyam Anantaya Durvi Tarakyatma Karmane Nirgunaya Guneshaya Sattvastaya Chasampratam. My Lord, all obeisance is unto you who are eternal, beyond time's limits of past, present, and future. You are inconceivable in your activities. You are the master of the three modes of material nature, and being transcendental to all material qualities, you are free from material contamination. You are the controller of all the three modes of material nature, but at the present you are in favor of the quality of goodness. Let us offer respectful obeisances unto you. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutaya Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasatundeve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Pasikatya De Satarane. The demigods are finishing their appeal to Krishna. That's the difference between a demigod and a demon. The demons, they never appeal to Krishna or Vishnu, and the demigods, they're always appealing to Vishnu whenever they're in trouble. This is the Paribhasa Sutra of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Ete Changsa Kala Pumsam Krishnas Tu Bhagavan Swayam Indrari Vyakulam Lokam Mridayanti Yuge Yuge. That Krishna is not an ordinary personality, he is the avatari, he's the source of all the different incarnations. And whenever there is some problem that the demigods have, they naturally turn to Krishna, and Krishna comes and solves the problem. A lot of Srimad Bhagavatam deals with the problems that the demigods have, whether they're fighting against Ravana, or Hiranyakashipu, or Kamsa. Krishna's coming, and he's Paritranaya Sarunam Vinashaya Tudiskritam. Dharma samstapanardaya sambhavam yuge yuge. Krishna is coming and he's protecting the devotees, annihilating the miscreants, and reestablishing religious principles. In the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that there is a wondering that if Krishna is supposed to be the father of everyone, as he explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarvayona Shikuntiya Morte Yak Sambhavantiya Tasa Brahma Mahadyonir Aham Bija Prajapita. If Krishna is supposed to be everyone's father, then why does he always seem to favor the demigods and go against the demons? This seems to be partial. Krishna is supposed to be equal to everyone, but it seems that he always protects the demigods and always fights against the demons. So isn't this partiality? He seems to favor some of his children and go against the other ones. But actually it's not partiality, because Krishna simply reciprocates with the desires of the living entity. The demigods desire his protection, while the demons desire to annihilate him. So Krishna protects the devotees and annihilates the demons just as a reciprocation with them. So Krishna is actually equal to everyone. And one can understand that when one comes to the mode of goodness. Since the demons are in the mode of passion and ignorance, therefore they can't understand Krishna very well. They have their own understanding of Vishnu. They think Vishnu is their enemy. They think Vishnu is just another living entity, just like we are. More powerful, perhaps, but just another personality like we are. When the demoniac counselors of Kamsa were explaining about how Kamsa should go against Vedic principles and kill all the children who were born the last 10 days in the city of Vrindavan. Then they explain that you don't have to worry about Brahma, because Brahma, he's always engaged in meditation along with Lord Shiva. Brahma is always just sitting there with Shiva, just meditating. And as far as Vishnu goes, he's hidden himself in everyone's heart and he can't come out. So this is their idea of Vishnu. He's taking refuge in everyone's heart and therefore he can't come out. Just like Hiranyaksha, after he was killed by Lord Varaha, Hiranyakashipu became very disturbed that his baby brother had been killed by this animal in the forest, from the forest. So he went out looking for Varaha to avenge the death of his brother. So Varaha, he knew that I'm not supposed to kill Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu has gotten benedictions from Lord Brahma. If I kill him, it would be contradictory to those benedictions. Therefore, he had to seek shelter somewhere. He had to hide. But he couldn't hide anywhere in the universe from Hiranyakashipu. But then he thought the best place to hide would be in the heart of Hiranyakashipu, because Hiranyakashipu never looks in his heart for anything. So he immediately took shelter in the heart of Hiranyakashipu and was safely hidden there. In other words, those were demons. They never looked for Krishna as he actually is, as he's in the heart. They never try to understand their relationship with Krishna very clearly. All they can see is that Krishna, he's their enemy, and they have to kill him. So this is certainly in the modes of ignorance and passion. Sattva, Rajas, Tamai. Sattva, Rajas. Rajas tamas chabibuya satvam bhavati bharata. Rajas satvam tamas chaiva tamas satvam rajas tatha. Sometimes the mode of goodness becomes prominent, defeating the modes of ignorance and passion. And sometimes the mode of passion becomes prominent, defeating goodness and ignorance. And sometimes ignorance becomes prominent, defeating goodness and passion. In this way, there is always a competition for supremacy. In other words, if we choose one mode, then we might as well forget about the other modes. If we're in goodness, then there is no question of being in ignorance of passion. And if we're in passion, we can't be in goodness and ignorance. And if we're in ignorance, then we can't be in goodness and passion, because the qualities are very different. Therefore, the demigods are ones who try to choose goodness, and they understand Krishna properly. Although it says here, as it says in the Bhagavad Gita, Yomam Adim and Adim Cha Veti Lokamaheshvara Asamudo Samarateshu Sarvapapai Pramuchate. Krishna says, those who know me as the unborn, as the eternal personality of Godhead, undiluted, such persons are free from all sins. But he also says, Nitevidu Suragana Pravana Harshaya Aham adir hi devanam maharshanam shasarvashaha. Namebi du suragana. Even the hosts of demigods and the great sages can't know my origin, for in every respect I'm the source of both the demigods and sages. In other words, everyone within this universe is considered to be recently born. Although Brahma, right now he just had his 50th birthday. He's almost ready for retirement. He's a mere 150 trillion years old. So he's just considered like a recently born person compared to eternity. So just like a child can't know who their parents are, they have to ask. Prabhupada used to give that example, that if you want to find out who your mother is, who your father is, you have to ask who? Yes. The best authority to find out who your father is to ask your mother. Of course, there's that story of one boy, he wanted to become a disciple of one spiritual master. So generally in the Vedic culture, if a disciple should be a Brahmin. They didn't accept disciples generally from the other castes. Maybe sometimes Kshatriyas. But generally Kshatriyas or Brahmins would become a disciple. I think it was Gautama Muni, or I can't remember the name of the... Does anyone know who the... What's that?
Gautama
Muni. So the boy said, I don't know who my father is. In other words, according to who the father was, one could understand who, what caste the boy was coming from. So Gautama Muni said, ask your mother. So the mother said, well, I don't know who your father is either. And he went back to Gautama Muni and said, well, I don't really know who my father is. So he said, oh, you must be a Brahmin. Otherwise, no one would be so honest. But generally, the mother knows who the father is. And similarly, if we want to find out about Krishna, even the demigods have to find out from the Vedas who their origin is. Because Krishna is the origin of all of them, of everything in the universe. Krishna existed before the creation of the universe. So everyone is considered within this creation to be recent. Of course, some of us are more recent than others. But compared to Krishna, everyone is newborn. Therefore, the demigods don't, although they are in the mode of goodness and they understand the necessity of taking shelter of Krishna, and they understand how Krishna is the father of everything, just like Brahma, Lord Brahma prays, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamahang Bhajami. But they don't know Krishna that well. As I explained the other day, Brahma, he did know Krishna. He was surprised to see Krishna's appearance in Vrindavan. And therefore he stole his calves and cows and cowherd boys. And similarly, Indra was surprised that this little boy was creating such a disturbance. And he was even more surprised how he lifted up Govardhan Hill with his left pinky. So even the demigods are confused about Krishna. And they're in the mode of goodness. So what to speak of the demons who are in the mode of ignorance and passion? How can they understand Krishna? They can understand Krishna. Therefore, they misunderstand Krishna. But we shouldn't misunderstand Krishna. We have to accept Krishna as it's being explained within the Bhagavatam. As it says here, Nirgunam Guna Bhoktri Cha. That must be in the 13th chapter. Avivaktam Vivakteshu Vivaktam Iva Chasitam Bhutabharatri Tatajgayam Rishisnu Pravishnu Cha. Jyotisam apitaj jyotish, tamasam param uchite, gyanam 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 gamyam riti sarvastivishtitam. It's one of those verses, I think. Does anyone know which verse that is? No, let's check. Let's take a look in the Bhagavad Gita. This is the source of light. Sarvendriya gunavasam sarvendriya vivaryatam asaktam sarvabhrichchaiva nirgunam gunabhoktricha. He's the source of the super soul, is the original source of all senses, yet he is without senses. Sarvendriya gunavasam sarvendriya vivaryatam asaktam sarvabhrichchaiva. He's the maintainer of all living entities, yet he is, what is this? He's unattached, although he's the maintainer of all living beings. He transcends the modes of material nature, and yet at the same time, he's the master of all the modes of material nature. So this is Krishna's achintya shakti, his inconceivable energies. How anyone can control everyone's senses, but not have any material senses. How everyone can be the maintainer of everyone, but be completely unattached. How he can be the master of everything that's going on, and have nothing to do with it. So this is Krishna's inconceivable energies. So to understand these things, one has to transcend the modes of goodness. Even the demigods can't understand it. So what to speak of an ordinary living entity? So what to speak of persons who are not trained up in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, who have not practiced it? How difficult it must be to understand how a cowherd boy in Vrindavan, the son of Mother Jasoda, is actually the origin of everything. So even we go to India, where people supposedly know about Krishna, we find they hardly know anything about Krishna, or they misunderstand Krishna very easily. Practically, majority of the people misunderstand. They think, oh, Krishna, we don't worship Krishna. He was just a lusty cowherd boy. He danced with other people's wives. He was so lusty, he married 16,108 queens. So Prabhupada used to point out that if Krishna is lusty, but then he's unlimitedly lusty. Who else can marry 16,108 ladies and live with them simultaneously? Not only that, but able to keep them all happy simultaneously. So that's Achintya Shakti. And the scholars say that actually it's not Krishna who speaks the Bhagavad Gita, but it's the Brahman within Krishna. The Brahman is speaking to everyone through Krishna. So they misunderstand Krishna. The scholars, the ordinary people, they misunderstand Krishna. And therefore, avajanati mamudha manushim tanum ashitya parambhava majanato mamabhuta maheshra. There, Krishna says there are mudhas. Practically everyone in the material world is a mudha. Therefore they misunderstand Krishna. Therefore they don't take shelter of Krishna. Instead they take shelter of Krishna's illusory energy and become more and more illusioned. Only by understanding Krishna properly can we take shelter of Krishna. Only if we know Krishna properly can we chant Hare Krishna with some attention and feeling. Otherwise, so many people may chant Hare Krishna, but the result is not necessarily Krishna consciousness. As a matter of fact, if we misunderstand the Siddhanta, instead of Namabhas or Shuddha Nam, we'll be chanting Namaparad. The Mayavadis, they chant Hare Krishna also. But they think by chanting Hare Krishna, they'll become Krishna. They'll merge into Krishna and become God. So this is called Namaparad. The more they chant, the more their offensive chanting is, the more they become away from Krishna. Therefore, those who have no philosophy are better off than those who have the wrong philosophy. If you want to learn the violin, if you go to Austria, and you tell them you go to a very famous violin school there, they ask you, how many years have you studied the violin? And if you say, I've studied for 10 years, then they charge you twice as much as if you never studied at all. Because if you hadn't studied at all, then they could teach you very easily. You have no misconceptions of how to play the violin. But if you studied for a long time, then they have to retrain you. They have to help you forget all the wrong things you've learned so you can learn the right things. So that's why Prabhupada said that at least in the Western world, people are more or less innocent. They don't know, they don't have all these misconceptions. Oh, Krishna is one of the demigods. He's an incarnation of Narayan, or he's all the speculations that arise. Because they don't believe in the demigods. They don't know about any of these things. So therefore when Prabhupada came and said, you know, Krishna is God, there was no previous understanding to contradict it. So they accepted it. All right, Krishna must be God. They weren't taught from their childhood. Of course, we were taught all kinds of other nonsense things that we have to forget. But at least that thing, we didn't have any misconceptions. But if from the beginning of life, one can have no conception, be taught the right thing, then it's much, much easier to understand who Krishna is. In the meantime, because of our previous training, or lack of training, or misdirected training, Therefore, there may be so many misconceptions we have, so many, as Prabhupada used to say, not hesitancies, misgivings about Krishna. Why should Krishna be God? What kind of God is he? Why did he create this world, such a horrible place? So many people suffering. If God is a nice person, why is everyone suffering? As we've heard before many times, that even one philosopher, he wrote that actually the reason why things are going on so badly is because God is the oldest person. And because he's the oldest person, he's become senile. And he's lost touch with reality. Therefore, although he's trying to arrange things nicely, but because he's become half mad, things are going wrong all the time. But there's been some rumors that he's set for retirement soon. And when he retires, then one of the other angels will take over and things should go a lot better. They can't understand, you know, how is it that an innocent little child is born and then dies? Because according to their conception, the little child has no sin. How is it that it's getting some reaction? They have no conception of previous lives, previous karma. They have no idea about who God is or how he works. And therefore, if they hear Hare Krishna, they see the devotees are chanting Hare Krishna, they see the devotees are dancing, they can't understand, they think they're just wasting their time. Sentimental people jumping up and down with nothing else to do but go on the street and beg and try and get some money. And dance up, jump up and down. But similarly ourselves, we have to understand who Krishna is in truth. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yoveti dattvataha. Otherwise, we won't be able to take shelter of Krishna. In such a way, we want to understand how to take shelter of Krishna, or why we should take shelter of Krishna, or what results we'll expect from taking shelter of Krishna. The demigods, they expect if they take shelter of Krishna, Krishna will at least protect them from the demons. But that's not enough to really know Krishna very well. Just like if you call the police and they come and protect you, which is quite rare anyhow. But if that does happen to happen, but generally you don't get to know the policeman that well. He just comes, protects you, and then goes away, if at all. Similarly, the demigods, they always appeal to Krishna for protection. Lord Vishnu comes and protects them. But then he goes away. They never really find out very much about Krishna. But we have to go beyond just appealing for Krishna for protection. We have to find out more about Krishna. Then we can actually fully take shelter of him with love and devotion. So therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam at least brings us to the point here in this eighth canto. We're at the point where the demigods are taking shelter of Vishnu. Protection. So that's also necessary. There are different stages to surrender. There is accepting everything favorable, giving up everything unfavorable, believing that Krishna will maintain and protect one. But even beyond that is the stage where one can have no interest besides Krishna's interest, and then always feel oneself meek and humble, completely be aligned with Krishna. So we have to come to that platform, and then we can actually take shelter of Krishna fully. Then we'll actually become more and more conscious of Krishna, even beyond what an ordinary Brahma is conscious. By the mercy of hearing about Krishna from the authoritative sources, serving Krishna with devotion, then gradually Krishna will reveal what's being said about him. We'll be able to understand Krishna's personality as it actually is, and then we'll even transcend even the level of the topmost demigods. Because first of all, we have to come to the level of even a demigod. We have to come to the mode of goodness. And then beyond mode of goodness, this process of chanting Hare Krishna will take one even beyond the mode of goodness, where one can actually completely understand Krishna as he actually is, in tattvataha. So the process is so nice. The demigods don't generally take shelter of Krishna in that way. The demons will never take shelter of Krishna in that way. But the devotees have even a better opportunity than the demigods, if they take advantage of it. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. Initiated from the opera. No, you have to understand things properly. Nama Parad, Nama Vas, and Shuddha Nam. Means we have to chant Hare Krishna with understanding who we're chanting to. There has to be, the Siddhanta has to be correct. So initiation, according to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, is not even necessary to go back to Godhead. If one can chant Hare Krishna purely, then one can actually go back to Godhead, even without initiation. Although, one will not be able to chant Hare Krishna properly or purely unless one gets the right philosophy and purifies or modifies one's activities to the mode of goodness, regulates one's activities to the mode of goodness. So for that, initiation is necessary. But to go from Namaparad to Nam, usually it's Namabhas to Shudonam, initiation is certainly necessary, or at least especially the stages leading to initiation. And initiation, we have to surrender to someone. Ultimately, we have to surrender to Krishna's representatives. Otherwise, without surrender to Krishna through his representatives, then how would we actually develop a service attitude? And without a service attitude, how can we actually chant purely? Namaparada is there because we think we're God. So unless we become a servant of God, how will we give up the idea that we're God? As soon as we don't have a service attitude towards God, then immediately we have a service attitude towards ourselves, because we have to direct the service attitude somewhere. So unless I accept myself as a servant in a practical way, then how can I give up the idea that I'm God? I can't. So initiation is necessary. But of course initiation means to surrender to Krishna's instructions, to learn how to see how, where and how Krishna is present every, you know, in so many different ways, and to try to be able to understand under all circumstances how to serve Krishna. Then we can chant Hare Krishna without any offense. And by practice, we can come to that offenseless stage. Anything else? Yes.
By practicing Christian consciousness, yes, because the mode of goodness inevitably manifests, or we have to separately endeavor for the qualities, the qualities that are of the mode of goodness. So it's so separate, and it's like, do we have to separately like endeavor to cultivate those qualities, or will they just
why not?
By practicing attentive hearing and chanting?
No, obviously it's more than just hearing and chanting. Of course, hearing and chanting is sufficient, but we don't hear and chant purely. So even we try, you know, we still have, learning the etiquette will help us. Hearing and chanting could be sufficient, but generally it's not sufficient because we have bad habits. For instance, hearing and chanting won't teach us to use our right hand rather than our left when we're eating prasadam. But if we learn how to stay clean, externally and internally, then it's easier to chant Hare Krishna. Although chanting Hare Krishna, if we actually become to the platform of becoming conscious of Krishna, then automatically we'll become transcendent to the modes of goodness, just like Jad Bharat. Apparently he couldn't learn anything. He couldn't even learn which hand to use to eat with. His father couldn't even teach him how to say the Gayatri Mantra. He couldn't teach him anything. But he was transcendental, didn't really care about those things. But that's because he was already transcendental from birth. But we're not transcendental from birth. Therefore, we should take advantage of trying to cultivate the mode of goodness, because that will make it easier for us to understand how to chant Hare Krishna nicely. So it does take, therefore, in the nectar of devotion, there are so many rules and regulations for deity worship. And there are a lot of them have to do with cleanliness and punctuality and just things that deal with the mode of goodness, because Krishna likes the mode of goodness. So therefore we're encouraged to, you know, come to the brahminical stage of life develop the brahminical qualities, and at the same time Krishna will help us from within to develop them. So it's not that we neglect them, but we try to cultivate them to help us become conscious of Krishna. Just like if one learns tolerance, then in the midst of even difficult situations, one can still remember Krishna. One won't be caught up in the circumstances. So one practices tolerance, and it's a helpful quality for cultivating Krishna consciousness. Or, on the other hand, if one becomes conscious of Krishna, then automatically tolerance will be there. So either way. But our main emphasis is in cultivating Krishna consciousness by chanting Hare Krishna and performing these, especially hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with serving the devotees, worshipping the deities. That's our main emphasis. And along with that, we try to cultivate the qualities of goodness. Because our philosophy is that Vasudeva, Savaipum Samparo Dharmo Yato Bhakti Rahokshire Ahaitukya Pratiyata Yatma Suprasiyati Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Priyodita Jana Yayishivaira Gyanam Chayara Haitukam. By cultivating favorable service to Vasudeva, Krishna automatically causes knowledge and detachment to develop. So we just worship Krishna, but part of that worship is just like we're practicing worship of the deities. So we can't go up to the deities and, you know, think it's holy today and I'll throw some paint on them and, you know, see that Krishna didn't eat his meal and we're going to threaten to tie him up with a rope. We're not on that level. We have to deal with him in our reverence. And part of that is cleanliness, punctuality, and what's the other one? Punctuality, cleanliness, and what's that?
Consciousness.
Reverence or something. Yeah. So we have to cultivate that too, along with our service, Vaidhi Bhakti. So the mode of goodness is cultivated along with our service to Krishna. And that will help us understand Krishna in truth. And by doing that, then we'll be able to further take shelter of Krishna, and that will help us come to the mode of goodness too. And finally, transcendental goodness, pure goodness. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you.